And recording is in progress. Josefina.
Here.
Great, welcome. Adrian, she couldn't make it tonight. Mike.
Here.
Mike. Steve.
Here.
Oh, I thought you weren't coming. Okay.
I got great. Done early. Yep.
Nice. Elise is here. Jonathan. Wei Ling.
Here.
Welcome. Melissa. Jason. I know you're here. Dwayne. Diane.
Here.
Nora.
Here.
Great. Okay, we have a quorum. Ms. Douglas, would you like to go through the meeting norms for me again?
Will do. Hi, everybody. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comment on non-agenda items can be made at the beginning of the meeting. And after hearing a report, members of the public have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion of that agenda item. Please sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all the signups, so keeping the chat clear when public signups are being called for is appreciated. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You do not need to wait for public comment to be called to sign up, and you may sign up now for a future agenda item by indicating your name and the agenda item in the chat. Public comment will be capped at 2 minutes per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. To be sure your comments are heard, please sign up for public comment. Please remember that we are a community of choice comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view. This needs to be a safe space for a variety of opinions. We respect the timid voices as well as the loud ones, and we address each other in a respectful manner to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members and members of the public should please state their names prior to speaking. And this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the school website. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to start with the student leadership report. Nora, if you'd like to take it away.
Thanks. Hey guys. So I am very happy to report that Student Council has raised around $550 from our merch project initiative that we launched, where we're selling merch for all the grade levels. And that is all that money will be going towards future Student Council projects for student enrichment and hopefully maybe some in-person events next year and in the future years. We're going to relaunch the merch, like we're going to extend the deadline. So hopefully we will raise even more money, but that's just some good news that we had. We also had a Black History Month assembly put on by Black Student Union, which a lot of people reported was really informative and inspiring, which is really great to hear. It was put on by all of the Black Student Union members, and that club is co-led by Jada White and Amina Lackey, who are both juniors this year. So big props to them for organizing that and putting it together. And that club is also led by Mr. Lau Ji, and they had support from Ms. Starus in putting that really beautiful assembly together. It showcased a lot of different student art from each emphasis, and it was a really, really nice online presentation. One challenge though that we are facing in remote learning is attendance for student events is declining with each event. Unfortunately, not a lot of people got to see the assembly. Well, not a lot, but just not the entire school got to see it, which is unfortunate because it was a really, really beautiful presentation. That could just be due to Zoom burnout and the fact that we're ending quarter three and a lot of students are really kind of just tired, but whatever the reason, we are working on addressing the problem by kind of trying to garner more interest for future student events. Other than that, things are pretty normal as we wrap up quarter three and move into quarter four. Thank you.
you, Nora. Is there any public comment on the student leadership report? I'm assuming most of the people who are in public comment, it was for non-agenda items. Okay, any board comment or discussion about the student leadership report? Other than thank you, Nora. Okay. Moving right along. Let's see, we have a couple of people for public comment on non-agenda items. Jennifer Keith.
Hi there. So I'm Jennifer Keith, and I am a parent of a seventh grader. And I am wanting to talk about seeing on the board agenda in future meetings, discussion around plans for reopening the school. I think that especially in light of the last speaker, the student council member who referred to Zoom burnout, declining student participation, and how to solve that issue, I'd like to see the school grappling with, along with work or assistance from the parents and involvement, a serious discussion about getting our kids back in school in person as soon as possible. I am very, very concerned about the impact that remote learning is taking on our children. And with all of the information that is coming out about how schools can reopen safely and how school and how kids are going through such serious mental health crises right now, as well as severe learning drop-off, that this really needs to be a priority. And I would like to be involved in any way possible. That's it.
Thank you. So Sean Bianca McElwee, and I'm happy to be corrected on my pronunciation.
No worries. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, it's I'm Shoshana Bianchi McElwee, a parent to an OSA sixth grader. And thanks to Jennifer, I'm here actually on the same topic unknowingly. I'm addressing the board regarding communication on school reopening. We all understand the toll the pandemic and distance learning are taking on us, most importantly, our students. COVID and schooling are an incredible complex challenge. I dare say it's the most urgent issue to be addressing. And likely you are, yet the vacuum of communication and information has been increasingly alarming to me and others as schools all around us, even high schools, begin to open up in-person learning. I'm here to strongly urge the OSA board and leadership to begin holding bi-weekly town halls focused on reopening. You don't need to have all the answers to hold a town halls, but you need to provide frequent, regular, detailed information about what you do know, what you don't know, what you're considering and planning, and how the community can come together to help. For example, are you working toward short-term hybrid solutions, full-time in-person learning, or both? Has the school considered outdoor learning in tents, harkening back to OSA's beginnings? Also, we're a commuter school with transportation issues that pose a unique challenge. Well, where can I sign up for the committee to help get that figured out? Because I'm ready. These are just a few of my questions. What about the rest of the community? A survey is being distributed tomorrow. I'm wondering how I and others can give accurate and helpful answers in the absence of context and more detailed information. Without regular dialogue, how can we possibly know how we feel about our kids returning to school at OSA? And how can we understand each other's concerns? There are many hopeful signs regarding COVID, but it appears likely that we'll continue to need mitigation measures come August. The specter of our kids remaining at home all or most of the time for this coming fall and the 21-22 school year looms very large in my mind. With bi-weekly town hall meetings on safe school reopening and other frequent communication engagement, I believe we can come together as a community to get our kids safely back to school. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Karen Morphin.
Hi, my name is Karen Morphin, and I want to specifically talk about three topics. One is I want to reiterate again my last comment on non-agenda item last month to have the board appoint a CAC member to represent OSA with our local charter for the special needs community to have some representation with and meaningful representation with El Dorado CELPA. The second topic I want to speak about is the reopening. And I want to make sure that as we plan to reopen, we consider the values of trauma-informed systems, which are making decisions on transparency, on safety, on racial equity, on collaboration and empowerment, and also taking into consideration the recovery and resilience of our community. We are the most impacted in our community due to COVID, having our underrepresented students. And I want you guys to really take this 5 points seriously when making these commitments. I also want to remind you the Oakland by nature has an incredible sense of recovery and resilience. And I want to encourage the board and the administration to include the community in this process. Lastly, since this is an equity night, I would like to also remind you that teachers are part of this equity platform. And as of last year, in May for the year, our teachers did not have their letters of intent at hand. And that's one of the comments that I had made last year. As we're going to, it's now February, next month, most districts will begin to send out letters of intent. I would really hate to lose more teachers for the lack of proactive negotiations with our teachers. We lost way too many people last year, and I think that COVID is only gonna make it worse. So I would really hope that as March to June, which are months that are key for all the districts and their hiring process, that you take this consideration and we're not at the same place that we were back in May. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Amanda Brown Stevens.
Hi, I'm a parent of a sixth grader and an eighth grader, and I just had a question also about just getting more information about school reopening. I know that teachers are fortunately being vaccinated here in Alameda County, which is great. And I even had one of my kids' teachers actually miss a day because she was going to get her vaccination. And so it does seem like we have a lot of shifting in some of the concerns that originally were expressed. And I know there's a survey going out, but it has been really hard to get information. I think from what we've heard, we seem to hear the same things around some of the constraints that we heard even last spring around, like I understand the classrooms are in interiors and like there's definitely a lot of challenges, but I'd love to get more information about what are the strategies that the school is undertaking to deal with those, because those aren't going away. And we do have really, a really different situation with teachers being vaccinated because that just does create such a higher safety level for those teachers. And I know, I'm seeing every day, like the teachers working so hard to try and engage kids in Zoom. And I see more and more kids with their cameras off. From what my kids and their friends say, they don't feel like they're engaged, they're listening, they're just, really struggling. So it just feels like the teachers and the kids are together in just a totally untenable situation, and would just love to hear how we work together to change this, because it just feels like everyone's suffering and there's very little learning going on. And we would love to figure out how to partner with the school to, just get more information and figure out how we get on that path. And particularly, again, figuring out how we get to full, a fully open, safe school for next fall. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Bradburn.
Yes, hello. I wanted to speak about the audits that got put out. I was looking over the 2020 audit and I have some questions about the trends I'm seeing with allocations. I'm hoping that people are noticing this. I noticed in particular that in 2015, OSA spent 83% of its budget on education and 14.21 on management. And then in 2020, those audits showed 76 going towards education and about 21% on management. I'll pop that in the chat so people can see the specific numbers. The thing I think we should all bear in mind, this is not an anomaly. It happened bit by bit each year since 2015. But please bear in mind that budgets and spending are essentially the way an organization conveys its morals and its values. Today marks the 2-year anniversary of the board meeting where a group of teachers came and pleaded our case about the sustainability of teacher salaries and our deep concerns about teacher recruitment and retention. It concerns me that while we've been assured again and again that the school's concerned about teacher retention, the spending patterns I'm seeing in the audits don't support those words. So please, I know you're gonna be looking at budgets throughout, maybe tonight and always, but please consider how those actions on the budget support the rhetoric of the school. Thank you.
Thank you. Tracy Thomas.
Hi, it's me again. Hello to all the parents, teachers, and admin. For those who haven't met me in the last year that I've been participating, my name is Tracy Thomas, class of 2012, theater department. I know that a lot of the focus tonight is towards the reopening of the school, making sure that there are safety measures being laid down for both students and teachers to make sure that the transition is going as smoothly as possible. I also know that there has been a lot of talk about the mental stability of the students and as well as the teachers. It is as much a priority for everyone to be okay in the community. So I acknowledge that, and I want to thank you guys for continuing that conversation. I hope that that continues to unfold. I am coming today as an alum representative once again, but this time I would also like to acknowledge all of the alumni that have joined tonight at the board meeting. Thank you to people like Victoria Gregory of the theater department, who I looked up to as a ninth grader, to Larilyn Parmsford. For anyone that does not know about OSA in its era, that is Larilyn Parmsford. To Tavi Carpenter, to Taja Harper, everyone, even Jordan Hawley, who has been my right-hand man in the Alumni Association in creating it almost a year ago today. I say all of this because, once again, there are many people in that part of this OSA community that don't feel a part of this community. And unfortunately, that stems from a non-established network from the school. So much so that we created the Alumni Association to bring that community back together in an attempt. It's not perfect, but it's ours. And I'm really proud of what we've been able to create so far in 10 and a half months. So all that to say, I ask the OSA community, admin, teachers, parents, everyone, one, to honor this part of the community, because we care about OSA just as much as you guys do, even if we're not all here to show it. Secondly, we are a valuable asset to the community, and despite there have been efforts to reach out to members, a lot of people in the community that I have talked to over the last year still don't feel like there's enough effort made for them to feel comfortable. Now, there is a difference between saying, hey, alumni, come back. We got this opportunity. What are you guys doing now? And saying, hey, alumni, it's been a minute. We haven't checked in on you. We don't know what you're doing. And unfortunately for those alumni members that don't feel comfortable to come back yet, but want to assist, that kind of conversation goes a long way. And so that's why I ask everyone who tries to reach out, please be precautious, please be understanding of their hesitancy, because there has been a sense of apathy between the alumni, dating all the way back to the original graduating class of 2006, up to the class of 2020. And I hope that you understand that while the apathy is there, doesn't mean that it's permanent. So communication and acknowledgement is a must. And to all the people that have come tonight that are part of the alumni community, thank you for making this first step, because I believe it's the first step towards something that can grow into a healthy relationship back into OSA. That's my time.
Great, thank you, Tracy. And we have one more, Leela. Sorry, I don't have a last name.
Oh, sorry, I totally forgot to put that in. Hi, everybody. I'm Leela, and I'm a student at OSA. And the only thing I wanted to say was that I think we need to be mindful of equity issues surrounding coming back to school in person. Just things like small things, like a lot of our students take public transport or have a commute to get to school, which is quite frankly like going to expose them to COVID. So I think that the conversations surrounding going back to in-person should take equity into account, and we should be mindful when we have these conversations. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, consent agenda. Does anyone on the board want to take any of these items off of consent? Okay, we are voting on three items: the minutes from our last meeting, verification of standards-based instruction, and the second interim. Do I have a motion?
So moved. This is Steve.
Second. Dwayne.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right, let's take a vote. Josefina.
Yes.
Mike.
Yes.
Steven.
Yes.
Elise. Yes. Weiling.
Yes.
Jason.
Yes.
Wayne.
Yes.
Diane.
Yes.
All right, motion passes. The consent agenda is approved. Equity and the arts.
Tom, for a sec. Elise, I'm sorry. Yeah. Before we jump to the next agenda item, is it possible to add to next week's agenda a report on COSAP's negotiations? I really took to heart the comment that we're pretty close to, you know, the need to renew the contracts and, you know, understanding what the raise plan is and all of that, I think would be good earlier than later.
You mean next month's?
Yeah, next month's okay. Agenda. Yeah.
Yep.
Unless it's already in the plan for today, but.
No, it would have to be a closed session. So
okay. I
ask for that. Great.
Elise, and I'm sorry to interject, but also, we had Weiling and I had an opportunity to meet with parents last week. And one of the items that came up was the equity practices that we're undertaking as a school regarding retention and recruitment of teachers from underserved communities and marginalized communities. Can we add that to the agenda for next month as well?
Yeah, I think I wrote you back and said, if it's not covered tonight, I'll put it on next month's.
Great, thank you.
Any other? Okay, great. I believe this is you, Leela. You can take it away and start us. It looks like we have some great participation from staff tonight.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Welcome everybody and good evening. Tonight's school report's gonna look just a little bit different than previous board meetings because we've been asked by the board to report out on four topics. Two of these topics, sustainability and academic excellence, were reported out last month. And tonight we'll be sharing one report with a focus on Equity 2 in the arts. We will have public comment and board comment at the conclusion of the report. I wanted to put it all together because there was a lot of like intertwining pieces. So we also know, especially from the public comment that was made tonight, that there's lots of questions about preparing for in-person instruction. So before I step into our Equity 2 in OSA Arts, I wanted to hand it over to Mike Goss, our principal, to share some updates with our community.
Thanks, Leela. And it sounds like this information is much needed. So I apologize to those that are frustrated for lack of information. And I hope this is a starting point of turning that around. We're working on our communication, the comprehensive communication that's going to go out very shortly, and then also going to be dedicating a portion of the website for regular updates because this information is going to be very fluid. but I did want to tonight at least just provide people who are here with just kind of a status update. So I'll go ahead and do that. We are looking at what incremental return would look like for our students and for our faculty. We're working in collaboration with COSATS on this. It's very complicated, and we'll get into some of the details as to why, and many of them you guys are already aware of. We don't have dates that we can attach to it because it's safety and health that's going to guide this process. It's not a date. If a lot of school districts that have put dates on returns have had to switch those dates, and I know there's some frustration on lack of communication, and I do think part of that is a byproduct of our commitment to when we do throw dates out there, we want to make sure that we're able to stick by them and that we're confident in the health and safety attached to those. So surveys are going out tomorrow. Those are going to students, families, and teachers. Actually, the student one will be going out next week in advisory to ensure that all the students have time to complete it. I really need support from everyone who's here and talking to everyone in their networks to make sure we get as many responses as possible to the family surveys. And teacher surveys we'll be doing internally as well. So campus preparations are underway, and this involves conversations with our with COSATS, with our union, with all of our campus supervisors, with anyone and everyone involved, and all the communication that we get from the state, from the county in terms of safety. Information regarding vaccinations, as what it's been alluded to already in this meeting, it's being shared with teachers. Many have been vaccinated. And Alameda County is still in the purple tier. Some schools are able to open, but only schools who were previously opened prior to returning to the purple tier. So I want to clarify that as long as we're in the purple tier, being a school that had not yet opened, we're just not eligible to be opened. I'm an OUSD parent, and I received communication from OUSD today, actually, that was saying that their plan right now is grade 6 through 12 to remain remote for the remainder of the year. So as a parent, I'm trying to prepare for what that looks like. Next slide, please. We're looking at all of our classrooms. So I want to give you a little more detail on what our like actual thought process is and looking at these rooms. We have a total of 16 classrooms with windows. Okay, so let's just use that as a starting point. Those are the exterior buildings on the Fox campus. We want to prioritize the ones that we deem the most safe. So those would be the windows without carpet, the ones with the least, you know, amounts of mass within the room so that they're easier to sterilize and easier to do the regular cleaning that needs to be done. Air filtration systems are currently being ordered and installed in all classrooms that we intend to utilize. And we're going to do this in order of which classrooms are the safest. So as we phase into in-person instruction, the classes that are first to be used will be the ones that are ready. We will have classrooms ready within the coming weeks. Our campus team is working on it. That doesn't mean we'll be able to return to campus because there's many other factors that need to happen, but we want to make sure we're ahead of the game so that when we're able to return, we have the space available to us. Water bottle filling stations are being installed throughout the building. This is just going to be the new normal. I think drinking fountains might be something that we tell our grandkids about someday. It seems like that's just the way the world is going. And so we're trying to get ahead of that and make those switches now. Sanitizer stations being put first in all utilized classroom space and then far beyond that because they're going to need to be throughout the building. New signage that's relevant to the health and safety protocols, including the way that traffic will be designed to move through the hallway and reminders about hand washing and all that is being ordered and will be installed. Assessing each classroom for appropriate number of students. Very likely these classrooms that I'm sharing with you now, the 16 of them, can hold up to about 12 students. We don't have an exact number yet, but you know, if you do the basic math on that, we're looking at somewhere maybe around 200 students if those were the classrooms we were limited to. And then reducing the unneeded materials in classrooms so that we can make cleaning an effective and efficient process. I see the chat's going off, but I'm focusing on this, so I apologize if I'm missing things that are there. If someone wants to interrupt me at some point, I'm happy to address something that might come up. The following are tentative plans for what the phase-in would look like. Phase one would be a partial return to campus. That'd be 25 to 100 students. This is if we're just using those exterior rooms with windows, probably starting with those ones without carpet, as I mentioned, which accounts for, I believe, six of those rooms. This would be students in need of academic intervention, the in-person assessments that are going to be starting soon within our special education department, and then people in most need of community building. Our sixth graders we don't want them to enter our school next year as seventh graders, having never been on the campus. So if there's any way to possibly allow for them prior to that to have a community building and welcoming experience, we would like to prioritize that. We don't know if it's going to be possible, but these are the thoughts that are in mind right now. Our ninth graders, a lot of them fall into that category too. So there's conversations happening, and that's all in the instructional aspect of this, where we're going to work real closely with our teachers to make sure that the plan that we create is something that's supported by, you know, critical mass. Phase two would be an increased partial return. That would be 100 to 200 students daily. That would be if we utilized all of our exterior classrooms on the main campus. So an idea would be if we could have 200 kids, would we have 120 kids in each grade level? Would there be some kind of way where we'd rotate by grade level based on days? Would it be, you know, middle school morning, high school afternoon, or vice versa? These are all conversations that we're beginning with our teachers union, and going to make sure that all of our teachers are represented and figure out what that would look like. There's going to be time, of course, until that's possible, but we want to make sure that we're fully prepared for when that happens to know how to introduce that phase of the return. And then phase three would be the full use of space. This is only possible with HVAC improvements throughout the building. We're currently hiring someone to come in and do an airflow analysis throughout the building and determine exactly what needs to be done in order to utilize those interior classroom spaces to deem them as safe. And once that happens, that could theoretically be the 400 to 800 students daily. That's based on all the rooms being able to be used. But now we got hallway limitations. At best, our hallways, our kids are 6 feet apart. So there's lots of things to consider before we could return to a full 800 person capacity. Next slide, please. So one thing I want to remind you is that the tier level, there have been major improvements, thankfully, just in our country in terms of infection rates. And it's a relief to us all to see the numbers decline. And we hope that things stay that way and complacency doesn't impact that in a negative way. The tier level does not acknowledge our specific concerns. So I just want to remind you that in managing expectations that I've had a lot of parents, you know, cite the Park Day School or a comparable school saying they're back, you know, what are they able to do that you can't? Well, I know the dean over there, they have dedicated outdoor space for every single classroom. So I just want to remind you, we don't have outdoor space. So the tier level and the actions of other schools can be informative and can be helpful. And I invite the information. I want as much information as possible, but it's not always directly applicable to our process. The exterior of our building classroom spaces, the exterior rooms is not suitable for all types of programming. Okay, so we got these 16 rooms, but can you hold a dance class in there? Can you effectively hold an instrumental music class in there? So there's, even when we can return to those rooms, there's gonna be limitations to our programming. Some of the art forms won't be cleared when everything else is. Dance is likely to remain on the list of classes that cannot be held, and vocal music, as the worry of contamination is more significant there. HVAC system I mentioned. I wanna point out with vaccination, it's not just availability, it's also comfortability. Not all teachers are comfortable receiving the vaccinations at this point, and there are also unknowns regarding the efficacy. So as a school, our current mode is share as much information we can about the availability, but without pressuring people at this point to receive the vaccination. In fact, just sharing that information has been brought to my attention by a member of our teaching staff is saying, hey, it feels like a little pressure here. So I just want to share that as knowing that it's a little more complex than just having them available. Class size restrictions pose obvious challenges. Some families and teachers are likely to not feel comfortable returning even when we do determine the space to be safe. And that's where the survey is going to help out. We really need to understand. Leela, you make excellent points, and I would love to talk to you at more length because there are so many nuances to the conversation about how this looks in terms of equity once we are able to return in a partial manner. So, and also Ms. Bradburn brought this one up, and I think it's an excellent point, is the efficacy of in-person instruction with limitations. We need a real in-depth study. It's not conclusive that to have 10 people in a room with a teacher with a mask will be more effective than a teacher who's able to teach without a mask to a larger group online. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but we're in an unknown territory here. We really need to get into the details and do a careful, thoughtful study before we assume that one thing is going to be better than the next. being a school that's not a neighborhood school, depending, not even a city school, we're a regional school. We depend heavily on public transportation, and we need to fully understand how this impacts. You'll see in the survey, we need to get a really clear sense of who's riding public transportation. I have my speculation on it, but I want to know the facts. I want to know exactly who's more dependent and what are the inequities that that poses, as some groups are going to be more dependent on public transportation than others. Beyond that, the list of many other inequities that are going to be imposed by a return while any type of safety concerns on our campus are still present. So I don't want to sound defeated here. I love a challenge. We're working, we're meeting like four times a week and on specifically this note. And I vow to be better with communication moving forward. This is the beginning of us sharing much more outwardly. And I just want to provide you all with an update.
Thank you, Mike. I do have to say, behind the scenes, we have been working, attending meetings with the county and the city, reaching out to the Charter Schools Network organization, getting as much information up to date as possible, working with the city. There's just been a lot going on behind the scenes. So I hope that some of these updates were helpful. It's a good start. And tomorrow we will be forthcoming with some surveys. So I'd like to switch us over to our Equity 2 and arts presentation that we're sharing this evening. So tonight we're sharing out some behind the scenes work we've done regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion work at OSA. This will include our all school year long professional development work with Candace Wicks Davis, the research we've done to form an equity task force for the 21-22 school year, a report on OSA's Step It Up program currently even during COVID, and then the meetings with administration, students and staff, and of course programming that's been implemented to build and strengthen our community. In addition, we're going to share some behind the scenes work that our arts faculty have been involved in to support incoming sixth graders that will be entering OSA through a lottery and not an audition. Next slide, please. All right. And excuse me if you hear whining in the background, I apologize. We have a puppy and my husband is having trouble curtailing him. He keeps coming to the door. So this is a wonderful chart here of our PD focus, our professional development focus this year that we've been working all year on with Candace. We began with a Cultural Mindfulness Institute, part one, part two, and part three. This focus of this work was to really reflect on our individual positionality and pedagogy. We then shifted into taking a close look at our organizational systems. From an equity lens, we were asking what's working and where could we do better? And we've arranged focus groups that were formed in middle school and high school and academics and arts. And I do want to say that every single person working at OSA, regardless of whether they're classified staff or certificated staff, are all partaking in this very community building, incredible professional development. Outcomes from work are going to help us create an organizational rubric. Our next task will be to design a strategic plan that has a focus on equity. And some of our work we're doing with Candace, and some of our work we're doing outside of Candace with DEI work at our school. Next slide. So this is an organizational chart. This is where we're kind of working now in our focus groups. We've gone through this template, kind of naming the system and going through the different steps to the end where we're looking at where does change need to happen. I also would like to share that all of this work is going to be folded into the big three-year strategic plan that we're designing this semester for the school. Next slide. Another piece that we worked on with Candace was our work with Shauna. So Shauna works for Candace and she facilitated focus group conversations around DEI. These were the six groups that represented the members of our community. And she met with each of these groups, developed a report, shared that report that has data in it with OSA leadership, with OSA administration, and this has been shared with the board and with leadership. And we are taking the data from this to begin to embed it into the 3-year strategic plan. Next slide. So some outcomes from our work with Candace really are developing this organizational assessment, creating this identity statement, and developing this strategic plan that focuses on equity for OSA. And in our work with both Candace and Shauna, we're collecting a lot of data. And again, this data is going to be folded into our 3-year strategic plan that's currently being structured by the 13-member leadership team of the school. Next slide. So the piece outside of the PD that we've been working on is a number of meetings, and I just wanted to be transparent tonight and share some of this information. Once a month, the OSA administration, Mike Goss, Katie Zog, and myself meet with the board of students of color and their advisor, Ms. Joshi. And they brought to us a list of demands at the beginning of the school year, and we've been meeting monthly to have discussions and hear and address their concerns and have a general check-in. Some outcomes that have come out of this are really pushing for student representation to be on the interview panel for staff positions, which we're wholeheartedly in agree with. They would like to attend and present at one of our professional development meetings for staff, which is great. And I do want to give a big congratulations because they really worked hard and did a lot of work around Giving Tuesday in early December, which had a big focus on our DEI. This was a nice fundraiser. The students, Ms. Joshi and Mr. Oz, produced videos to encourage our community to donate. So that was great. Mr. Roos, our Dean of Students, has done an incredible job this year during our remote learning with building community and culture. She is part of the leadership team at OSA, and she's going to be presenting in a few minutes with regards to the work that she's done. And the other piece I just wanted to comment before I introduce Mr. Roos is that Mr. Oz was instrumental in developing the role of a DEI researcher. When running a school, it's really important to make data-driven decisions that are student-centered and in the best interest of the program. Ms. Joshi is a valued teacher at OSA and applied to take on the DEI research position this year. And since August, Mr. Oz, Ms. Zog, myself, and Ms. Joshi have been meeting weekly to have conversations around DEI and how we as an organization can do a better job with regards to supporting our students, staff, and programming at the school. We have some direct outcomes that Ms. Joshi is going to share. But first, next slide. First, I'd like to hand the floor over to Anna DeRoos, our Dean of Students.
Hey everyone, good evening. As Ms. Sherman-Colt said, I'm Ms. DeRoos, and I'm here to talk to you about student culture and remote learning. Last summer, as we prepared to enter into school year of distance education, we knew that we needed to have a solid plan in place to preserve student life in a virtual setting. We no doubt had our work cut out for us, but have been able to successfully provide consistent opportunities to engage the students in the community at a time when they likely need it the most. Each week, the students participate in either advisory, an OSA artist series event run by Dr. Dolores Thompson, an OSA students create meeting, or an assembly. The meetings rotate each month and happen every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Tonight, I will be talking specifically about the OSA Students Create meetings and monthly assemblies. OSA Students Create is a community building event that allows students to receive important announcements and news of upcoming events, as well as providing a space for students to share their artwork and passions with their peers and the larger school community. They are organized and emceed by students from my leadership class to ensure that each meeting is representative of the student body and addresses student needs and interests. We have found that these events are a wonderful way for our students to showcase their talents and stay connected with one another and with what's going on in the school community. Our assemblies also provide opportunities for announcements and news of upcoming events, but the main difference is that our monthly assemblies focus on building community by honoring cultures reflective of our student body. Thus far this year, we've had 3 different affinity groups host assemblies: the APISU, hosted in September,
Latinos Unidos in October. And we just had our February assembly on Tuesday that was hosted by the Black Student Union, which is more commonly known as BSU. They are organized and emceed by the respective affinity group leaders and supported by the faculty advisor for that club and myself. These assemblies provide an overview of culture and history and educate our community about issues these respective communities and our students face each day. In doing so, they serve to provide a safe space for our students and teachers from marginalized groups, BIPOC groups, those who identify as female, and members of the LGBTQ plus community to feel represented, seen, heard, and included within the larger community. I must say that despite the challenges of remote learning, it has been incredible to work with and support our students and teachers who spent countless hours designing assembly presentations that reflect and celebrate the beautiful diversity of our student body. The end result of all three of these assemblies was truly awesome.
Thank you, Anna, so much. She's done so much tremendous work and it's made a huge difference at the school. Next slide, please. I'd next like to introduce Uma, Ms. Joshi. She is a wonderful teacher at OSA and is our DEI researcher this year. We've been working so hard since the beginning of the school year, and she's going to share out some tremendous work and outcomes. Next slide.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Good evening. I am here to present on the diversity, equity, inclusion, and we added justice here for our programming this year, the things that we've been working on, collaborating on, and just wanted to provide an update for everyone. Just to get everyone familiar with this new acronym, we are now calling this program and the coordinator position JEDI. And so what that stands for is justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. This is taken from a variety of different sources. This is a common use term in a lot of Bay Area programs that use JEDI and ethnic studies programs that use this kind of language. And we had parents at the last board meeting kind of shout this out as a great example of what we should be using. So we decided to change our name to JEDI. So if you hear me talking about JEDI, I'm not talking about Star Wars, I'm talking about this. And so here is our update. Okay, so just to get everybody on the same page on why we need to do this work, I think it's relatively clear for most of us that are probably here, but I think it's important to ground us in the systems at place at OSA that we are trying to combat during this program. So the first are just oppressive systems that naturally just are a part of every school system, every educational system that of course are at OSA. OSA is not neglected from this. It's definitely a part of it just because of naturally what our education system looks like in the United States. And these systems disproportionately affect our Black and Brown youth. As you can see in past presentations and past data from our last board meeting where we really looked at students who are being negatively impacted by remote learning, we saw a heavy, heavy increase in our Black and Brown students who are facing a lot of large inequities being remote. So we clearly see it, it's very, very pressing right now. And so I just wanted to point that out. We need to become a more welcoming and productive environment for students, parents, teachers of color. And that goes for alumni of color as well. I just wanted to shout out the alumni that are here and the students that are here, taking time out of a really long day to just be here and be in support. But we wanna make sure that we continuously create a space that is welcoming and productive for them because we are seeing a lot of people leaving the school. And we wanna make sure that we not only are recruiting people to come to OSA, but we're retaining them. That's a big piece of this. And then just anti-racism in general, I really want to make sure that in this presentation, we're not using buzzwords. I think we're in a climate right now where buzzwords are just a trend and a fad and things that companies like to stick in their meetings and on their websites. And this is not something that is a buzzword. It's something that actually needs an active commitment to. And so we can't be performative. We can't just throw around words and say like, hey, we're gonna be diverse and we're gonna be equitable and we're gonna include students and we're gonna be rooted in justice. Those actions actually need to have measures taken behind them. And so we need to make sure that we're actively doing that. Okay, next slide. Okay, so this is just a very brief process of what our work has looked like this year. I broke it into the different quarters of the school year so far and kind of where we're at. So as Ms. Sherman-Colt mentioned previously, Mr. Oz and Ms. Dog, we meet every week. And so these are kind of the different phases that we have been looking at. So in quarter one, we focused on research and identifying the needs of the school. This phase did not take very long because this work has been an ongoing process. It was spearheaded by our lovely Ms. Kaba Menzies prior to this. And so we had a lot of data, we had a lot of support. We knew kind of where we were going, but we needed to just kind of have that research at hand. But this phase did not last very long, and we intentionally actually cut it short because we felt like the problem at hand was much larger than just research. So in quarter two, we moved towards developing what this task force would look like. And I'm gonna talk about the task force on another slide. But the things that we found from our previous work with diversity initiatives is that oftentimes this work has been placed on one faculty member, and this faculty member is taking on the role of many different things and has only been a part-time employee when this is really full-time and beyond work. And that is the work that Ms. Menzies held prior. And so we really wanted to make sure that in the development of this new program, this was not going to be one person, especially one person of color holding up this work, that this was going to be a community effort, a collaborative effort, and an effort of a group of people that was going to work together. So we kind of developed that task force in quarter two. Right now, as we're looking at the end of quarter three, we're looking at recruitment of the task force, making sure that we're hiring the necessary figures that need to be involved. And then next quarter, we're hoping to really just start getting to work. So that is where our process has been so far. Some of our goals, I just kind of broke it down to three things: collaboration, effectiveness, and sustainability. So first of all, collaboration is really important. As many of you have mentioned here tonight, making sure that we collaborate with different community members and affected groups, especially our students of color, students with disabilities, the LGBTQ plus students and families. These types of initiatives do not just impact students, they impact families, they impact teachers. So we have to be mindful of the different affected groups and how we can collaborate and hear everyone's voices and make sure people are properly represented. We need to make sure that we're being held accountable in this work. As I previously mentioned, we're in a very trendy buzzword phase right now, and people are not actually being held accountable for how they're implementing these initiatives. So we're trying to actively make sure that this work is going to be held accountable in some way, that people will be evaluated, that there will be ongoing conversations, because the work doesn't really ever end, and we need to keep making sure that we're making progress and moving forward in the right direction. And then finally, sustainability. OSA struggles with sustainability to a certain extent, because oftentimes a lot of these things include a budget, include funding, include things that sometimes we have control over, sometimes we don't have control over. And so we really want to create a sustainable program. We want to get people in the door who are willing and ready to work for OSA for multiple years to come. We don't want to see turnover as much as possible. And so it's really important that we adequately fund this program, that we adequately fund the people behind this program so that it's sustainable and it's long lasting, and we're not seeing turnover, we're not seeing people coming and leaving and work having to restart. We're really seeing a program that's sustainable. So that's really important. I just wanted to touch briefly on some community collaboration that we've kind of been working on, and a bunch of different groups are listed here. And these are just the groups that I've been working with, that I know administration has worked with on occasion. And teachers as well, including COSATS, which is the Staff and Teachers Union. So it's been really awesome, honestly, in this role, because I get to hang out with really cool people all the time, and I get to go to meetings and talk about issues at hand and solution-oriented skills. So the Parents of Color group and the Parents of Students with Disabilities group has been really supportive in this process. We've had many meetings, we have had town halls. We had one last week that was really successful, that was in collaboration with the Board of Students of Color, the Parents of Color, the APT, the Parents of Students with Disabilities. So we're having these great sessions. We're being able to meet together in community and to hold each other accountable, which was what our town hall last week was about, for those of you who were there. In addition, the Board of Students of Color has been doing really, really amazing work. They have a list of demands that they're working through with the administration. They're planning a professional development meeting in the coming weeks that I'm really excited about. And they've been meeting with administration every month. So that has been something that's been really collaborative. The faculty and staff group of color has been meeting since last summer. We also had a list of demands that we came up with in the summer, and we have been meeting alongside all of these different groups and collaborating with the students as well. And then our PD with Candace that has been spoken about and Step It Up, which I believe is going to be right after my presentation. Okay, so this is like the bulk of this presentation is really looking at the task force that we've created. So essentially, this is a list of people that we feel like need to be represented on an equity task force. A lot of these roles are already present on our campus, and their jobs are already equally measurable into this task force. So the positions that you see here in bold are positions that would either need to be funded or filled by someone. So our first and foremost priority is the JEDI coordinator. This person would be the overseer of this task force. And like I mentioned before, previously to this, a lot of these roles like Step It Up, student affinity group leader, equity curriculum developer, a lot of these roles were combined into the DEI coordinator position. And like I said, that was a part-time position doing all this work. So we pretty much took that position and actually spread it out amongst different leaders and groups of people working on this to make sure that it's a collaborative effort. So we have the Step It Up coordinator. The student affinity group leader is not something that needs to be funded per se, because I think that's already been figured out how those affinity group leaders will be getting paid for next year, but it is something that will probably need to be filled by a staff member. We definitely wanted to make sure we had student and parent representation on here. That was something that was really important in our conversations of creating this, is that we need all members of the OSA community really on this task force. The equity curriculum developer is one that would be a new position that would need to be funded. There has been a strong need for curriculum development and curriculum work at the school. A lot of students of color talk about like the lack of diverse representation and equitable curriculum. A lack of the ethnic studies program is something else I'm gonna talk about later. There's only one ethnic studies class at the school, and it's a big class. There's 35 students in my class right now for ethnic studies, and that's because we only have one class. So part of this curriculum developer would be working with teachers, but also making sure that we have a sustainable ethnic studies program, because there is a huge desire and a need for the course. So that's something that would be new. And then we have our dean, our SPED coordinator, which is our special ed coordinator, our pathways coordinator, our student support team representative. AVID is also something new. The AVID program is a college and career readiness program that has huge, huge benefits. I myself was an AVID student. And so we've been working to see if we can create a sustainable AVID program. In order for us to have that, we need a coordinator or someone who's really like in charge of the program. And so that would also be a new position that would need to be filled and or funded. And then we have our administration executive director, principal, vice principal. So this is like what the task force would look like. Ideally, if we had everyone in bold, everyone was filled, everything was funded, that would be our full task force. That's like the most ideal situation. But right now what we're doing is focusing on recruiting our JEDI coordinator and making sure that we have someone in place for that for the next school year. And we will talk about that in a second. Okay, accountability is important. As I've mentioned before, we will be working with Candace, who works with us for our professional development, in creating an equity rubric for the task force to use next year. This rubric is going to hold everyone accountable. So not just students, and I mean, not just teachers in their classrooms, but also administration, also the task force itself. So every single person involved in this work needs to be properly evaluated based on this rubric. And so the rubric is going to be crafted by community members. It's going to be crafted in our professional development meetings. I'm hoping that we get collaboration from parents and students on this rubric as well. But this rubric is going to really help us stay accountable, because really these initiatives are nothing without accountability. Like they don't really mean anything. They don't hold any weight. And so we really want to make sure that moving forward, we have accountability. And so through this rubric that is hopefully going to be a community made effort, we're all going to be able to hold ourselves accountable to this work. Okay, so some next steps that we have. First and foremost is hiring the JEDI coordinator. The application has been posted, and I believe Ms. Sherman-Colt is going to go over it with you all next. So you all will get to see the application. And I think some people have put it in the chat so that you can see the job description. Implementing a sustainable and accountable equity task force is really a big priority right now, making sure that we find the right people, making sure that people can sustainably stay at the school and are invested in this work and that this work is ongoing. Curriculum development and ethnic studies is a piece that I'm hoping to see grow a lot in the next few years. With the help of Ms. Schultz, we have finally been able to create ethnic studies as an A required course, which means it now can officially be a social studies course that can be taken for graduation credit in place of a normal history class like US history, world history, government. So that just got approved like maybe last week or the week before. So shout out to Ms. Schultz for helping me with that. But that is in the hopes that we create a long-term sustainable ethnic studies program, that it's not just one class, that it's a graduation requirement, that it's accessible to all students because all students need to take this course. And so that's a part of that continual effort. And then just continual work. Like I said before, like this work doesn't go away. We'll always be learning, we'll always be growing. And this is continual effort. So I just wanna thank everyone that's here, and I wanna thank the community really for being in support of this program. And I'm really excited to see where it goes. So thank you.
Thank you, Uma. As you can see, there's a tremendous amount of work that has happened just in this past semester up until now. So you may need to get your bifocals on to read this. It's very tiny. And so if you don't have bifocals, we are putting this in the chat. There should be a PDF, that little link, so that each of you can access this. We recently posted the DEI coordinator position, and we are sharing the PDF with you so that you can share this with your community network. We will be posting the position on EdJoin. We'll also be posting this on the Art Schools Network, which is a national art schools educational organization that goes to all the art schools in the country, so people can look at it for postings. There's a number of regional job fairs for POC, Americans for the Arts. We are looking at some additional organizations, the National Alliance of Black School Educators, Black Teacher Project, California Association of Black School Educators, a Black Education Network, which was formerly California Alliance of African American Educators, local colleges and universities. So where we would love some assistance or if people have some guidance of where they feel we should be posting this, we would love to hear from you and continue in that endeavor. If you have a recommendation of a particular organization we should contact and or a particular candidate that we should be on the lookout for a job application from, please let us know. The interviews have not been scheduled yet. And when we do determine the date, we will let the community know. We will be looking for parents and students to be a part of this interview committee, right? So we just wanted to bring a little closure to that. Again, we just posted this, but we're when we get closer to those dates, we'll let the community know. Next slide, please. So we have a wonderful team, Kev Choice, Jordan Carnes, and Michaela Peters, who make up the Step It Up team. And even during this very challenging year of COVID, we still had this program running. And I want to turn the stage over to Kev Choice, who is going to share some of the work that they've done and some data with all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. First, just want to say hello to all community here, all my fellow teachers. And shout out again, Uma. That was such an incredible presentation. And your work here at OSA, if it's not valued, then we should all just throw hearts or hand claps or applause. Like, we should just really, just all the work you're doing with this, with equity and justice and diversity is just so incredible. And I'm inspired by you. So just thank you for that. You know, step it up. I came here to OSA, this is my sixth year. And when I came here, I was hired by, you know, I was brought here by Ms. Menzies, and she was like, I want you to teach piano and work with Step It Up. I was Step It Up coordinator for 5 years doing outreach. This year, because of, you know, positional changes, I asked to step into the position of program coordinator for Step It Up, and it's something that I value as an Oakland educator and as an OSA educator, and I'm really trying to give my best effort to this program. And and I shout out my team, Jordan and Michaela, who do just so much behind the scenes just to make Step It Up run. I mean, from creating this flyer to reaching out to parents to reaching out to students, it is really a team effort, and it's really something that I value, and I'm dedicated to making this a successful program. Just to talk a little bit about what we've done this year. You know, we got off to a late start, just really trying to figure out how to get the program going during COVID and without some of the budget things that we've had in the past. And one of the ideas that we brought forth was this collaboration with the People's Conservatory, which is an incredible program here in Oakland that it's almost like a baby OSA. They modeled themselves after OSA and our arts programs, having theater, having dance, having, you know, visual media, having music. And I created this partnership to where we had some faculty from their program and also faculty from OSA. And that's how we got the program up and running. OSA faculty taught dance, of course, Savage, you know, shout out Savage and Allison, just for their incredible work. Instrumental music, vocal music, was an OSA alumni. Give it up for Sarah. And theater, another OSA alumni who also is teaching, Tavia, who's also teaching at Elmhurst, who also brought in a lot of students from Elmhurst. Faculty from TPC taught in the digital media, visual art, production design, fashion design, and poetry. We called it poetry just to make it a little more appealing and a little more, you know, attractive to a demographic of kids who may not know what literary arts is. They might know what poetry and spoken word is. So that was kind of one of the collaborative things. Next slide. I like saying that. Next slide. School connections and outreach. You know, I think one of the main things about Step It Up is that it's important to build connections with schools. If we're here to, our goal is to connect with kids from Title I OUSD schools. That's in our mission statement. That's what part of Step It Up is to connect with kids from Title I schools. So these schools had three or more students who applied and were enrolled in our program. Burkhalter, Brookfield, Melrose Leadership Academy, UMing Charter, Think College Now, Manzanita C, Piedmont Avenue, Franklin, Elmhurst, and three middle schools, Edna, Frick, and Claremont. And, you know, it's good to see that these are schools in Deep East Oakland. These are schools in West Oakland. These are schools that I'm really trying to build a relationship so every year I can continue to go back and be like, yo, we're starting to step it up again, and we would love to have some of your students come through. Having connection with teachers and principals at these schools and families at this school is very integral. And I think overall we had over 40 different schools represented in our original enrollment. So that's a big number, and we're really proud of having a diverse pool and always trying to make that grow for sure. Next slide. Program stats. Oh, Jordan, Michaela, thank y'all for putting this together. I'm not good with data. I'm gonna just let y'all know. I'm a musician, I'm good with notes and harmony and things like that. Data is not my thing, but Jordan and Michaela really keep the data, that keep the enrollment going. We had 13 dates this year from October 19th to February 8th. Total applications was 93, which is really kind of on par to our normal years, even in person. So to have 93 applications from the beginning, 93 students that applied was a positive, you know, was a positive indicator that we can have a positive program this year. 59 students completed the program, and, you know, there were numerous reasons why some couldn't stay in. Some of it was just, you know, the time frame. Some students moved. Some of it was just actually just the struggles with the students in Zoom and their environments. And that was some real things that we had to deal with kids who are dealing with Zoom, having Step It Up classes in the evening. And sometimes it was just a little struggle for some students. And we did our best to stay in contact and encourage people to come back, but we did You know, we have 59 students who completed the program. 26 sixth graders applied for entry. This is also it's a big thing. This is the first year that really most of our students are fifth graders going into sixth grade who will usually be auditioning. This year they weren't auditioning. So we had 26 who actually applied for entry, which is a good number. And hopefully we get all of those students in through the lottery process. 18 seventh to ninth graders applied to audition, 5 no shows. And that's all Michaela's data. And I don't know if she's here, you know, if she wants to speak a little more. We can see, we kind of have it spread out by all the emphasis, you know, theater. I don't feel like I need to read every single number, but if you can look at it really briefly, you know, theater started with 17, fashion started with 8, you know, dance with 12, vocal started with 4. You can kind of look at that and just kind of get a layout of how many students we had. I think the important numbers are, you know, 4 fifth graders applied in theater, 2 in fashion, 3 in dance, 1 in vocal, 6 in DM, digital media, 1 in literary, 1 in literary, 5 in visual, and 5 in IM. So that's really, you know, the numbers that we're looking at is really getting students to complete the program and to audition and to get into OSA. And every year we're trying to increase that, but this was definitely for this being, you know, quarantine, pandemic, and not being in person, I feel like this is something that we could be proud of. Next slide. Yes, this is like what we're aiming towards in the future. This was put together, I believe, by Lisa and Romy and just our Step It Up team, just kind of assessing some of the information about Step It Up, how to, you know, what are we planning as far as our prep work, planning steps, what are some of our marketing outreach plans. We've been talking about doing this bridge to OSA, the spring bridge and summer bridge programs, and also just clarifying some of our roles. So this is just really just trying to keep us organized. And as I step into this leadership role, trying to really make sure that we're getting a head start on next year already. We're being most effective in our outreach. And I definitely want to, you know, open the doors to parents, community, about ways that we can connect with students to get them involved and step it up and looking forward to next year. So I don't know if it's any questions or encore or whatever. I'm used to an encore. I don't know if it's an encore, any questions. But again, I just want to shout out, you know, Michaela and Jordan. I know they're here. I hope they're here. Maybe they're not, but you know,
I'm here.
hey, how you doing? You have any?
Pretty good. I'm letting you do all the work and talking.
cool. But I'll be reading the comments and please feel free to reach out to me. You know, I do a lot of work in this community and I feel like that's what my value is here at OSA, is really connecting us to community, and I'm dedicated to that. You know, I literally was in the beginning of this meeting in a meeting as a cultural affairs commissioner about Asian and Black solidarity. So I'm connected to community in Oakland, and I want to make sure to Step It Up is getting out there, the OSA is out there, and that's really what I'm here to do. So please feel free to connect with me. And let's make Step It Up next year the biggest and best it's ever been.
Wow, Kev, thank you so much. Can you tell he's a performer? He's just awesome. I do just want to say before we step to Catherine that this team has done quite a bit of work, and this was the first year that a big partnership with the People's Conservatory started. So a lot of the work was Step It Up for second semester. We'll be planning for next year, as Kev said. In addition, there'll be a bigger vision, and we will be able to come back at a later date to kind of share out what that looks like. So thank you so much. I next would like to step in. Most of us always see Catherine from Office of Advancement share a report. This is a slightly different report tonight, and she has just been doing with her team a lot of work this year around not only funding things for this year, but looking ahead for some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion work we want to include for next year. And that's so important for us to look ahead, pre-plan to plan.